Boker Tov, L'chol HaNochachot, V'lamazinim. All those here this morning, all those listening, in the future, not now, I mean. We read this week the Sedra B'Shalach, V'hi B'Shalach Paro Es Sa'om. Paro sends the Jewish people out of Egypt after a long period of slavery, after a long period of indecision, of hesitation, after 10 Makos, after receiving a number of very, very harsh blows, culminating in the death of the firstborn. So then he decides to send the Jews out, and right away he regrets it. Yes? Sure. What's father's name? Aaron?
Aaron Kusher, Moshe Yaakov.
All right, we'll learn Lidish was Aaron Usher ben Moshe Yaakov. Tenish was Service Archaim, Judy Goldman. Thank you very much. Shriya Sosers and Shama. Your time today?
Yes.
Today? Okay. So the question is, why did Paro regret it? So the Medrash darshins a number of times here. And if you're at the Torah, Vayehi, the word Vayehi is always Lashon Poranos. It's always an indication of some type of trouble or sorrow or travail ahead. Vayehi b'me'achashverosh is a classic case. Vayehi b'me'amrafel. That's what Chazal have these drashos. Here too, Vayehi. And Medrash starts Vayehi b'shalach Paro. Vayehi is Vay. Zed oy vay, Paro said. I guess in the Egyptian equivalent of the time. He said, Vay, what have I done? Why did I send them out? Well, what was he missing? Like, what part of the movie hadn't he seen yet? 10 Makos, there's mass destruction, Egypt is devastated, the economy is ravaged, the people had enough of the Jews. So what was he missing? Hado dechziv, Medrash quotes the Pasuk in Yirmiyahu. Komar Hashem Tzvakos, thus said God, Ashukim b'nei Yisrael uvnei Yehuda yachdov. The children of Israel and Yehuda are oppressed together. V'chol shoveihem hechziku bam. All their captors hold on to them. Me'anu shalachom. They refuse to send them out. Goalom chazok Hashem tzvako shemo. But their redeemer is mighty. That's God. Yariv. Riv Yariv es Rivam, he will fight their battles for us. The key words here, we'll see in a moment, are the words that are not in the text. Me'ano shalchom, that he refuses to send them. Now, in context, it talks about the king of Bavel, but because the king of Bavel, Nebuchadnezzar, was not the first to refuse to send Jews out, just the latest in the line at the time, Chazal referenced the phrase to, of course, Paro, Me'ano shalchom. He also refused to send the Jews out. Why aren't the key words here in the text? Why did you say, you know, V'gomer, V'chulei? It's because Chazal, when they wrote the Midrashim, they assumed people had complete familiarity with Tanakh. So therefore they had to say a few words, write a few words, and you know the whole pasuk. We're on a lower level. Now, if you don't actually look in the text, you wonder what's the connection here. Mashal ma'adavar dome. So Medrash offers now a parable. La'adam shahayil afardes. Person had an orchard. Amar lo chavero mechorli es afardes hazeh. Guy says to his friend, says to the owner, please sell me your orchard. Machar lo b'mona, sells it him for 100 zuz. V'lo ho yodeh bala pardes ma besocho, sold it for 100 zuz, but the owner didn't really know what the orchard contained. Amru lo, so others said to him, b'chama machartas apardes, what'd you sell it for? He said 100. Amru lo, they said to him, whoa, yesh bo zeisim b'mea mana. In your orchard, it's a large field. You have an olive grove that alone is worth 100 mana. You have gfanim b'mea mana. You have vines that are worth 100. Rimonim, pomegranates b'mea mana. You have different types of spices that grow there. Each species of the spices are worth 100 mana. You sold it at a tremendous discount. Didn't you know what you were selling, what your own orchard contained? It's the Pasuk in Shir HaShirim, Kfarim im Neradim ner d'charkom. referring to the Jewish people's repository of spices. Ve'ilu lohoya shalokech elu mayanos shebizocho dai. If the purchaser purchased this land and there was only streams, springs in it, then it would have been enough for us. Shenemar, Mayan Ganim, Ber Maim Chayim, Vinazlim Min Lovanam. It's enough to have a stream that runs through the gardens. That is the well of living water. Hischu Hamocha Toa. So the seller then had second thoughts, began to regret what he had done. That's the mashal. Nimshal. Kachoya Paro, Kishishilachas Yisrael. When Paro sent out the Jews, Lo hayu lefon of klum, he didn't really reckon with the Jewish people. He just saw them as an annoying gnat to be disposed of. And once they were gone, his kingdom would rebound. Omer lo gedolei malchus, his top advisor, said to him, Me asisa, what did you do? Ilu lahoya v'yodam ela habiza levada dayom. If only for the wealth they took from us when they went around taking the wealth of Egypt, right during the right before they left, that they had uncovered during the days of Choshech. They took a lot of wealth with them. Erev Rav also took, and Erev Rav really means, in one sense, is the wealth also. Ela shekam ashirim hayu bahem. You had some of the Jews who were very wealthy. Now we've lost access to their wealth. Kama chachamim, some of them are very wise. The kama bali umnuyos, some are very professional, very artistic. Shenema shlachayich pardes rimonim, it's a rimon, it's a people that encompasses many different talents. Kama anashim minashim v'tafayu, there's so many of them, men, women, and children who grow up to serve us also. Shenemar, that's the pasuk above, the chol shovem hechziku bam. Those who captured them want to hold on to them. Maksiv acharav, go alom chazak Hashem tzvaka Hashem, the Redeemer is mighty. Bosa Shah, when Paro realized, after being told what he lost by sending them out, hischol kore, he started to cry out, voy, voy, vayhi b'shalach. Okay, what's the pshat? I want to take one point first. That from our perspective, it says if the lokeach ilu lahoya shalokeach ela mayanoshu b'sarcho dai, if the lokeach the purchaser, we're the purchaser. Well, God is the purchaser, but let's say we're the ones who got out. If the orchard only had streams, springs, that would have been enough for us. Okay, what does it mean? What's the mayon? I think mayonos means, mayonos obviously things that flow. It's freedom. It's the ability to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I mean, from our perspective, we need anything else. The fact that a stream goes from place to place freely, unimpeded, unhindered, so to all we wanted was to get out to assume our national identity. From our perspective, that was all we sought. We'd say Dayenu. From Paro's perspective, the loss was a much greater one. What did Paro miss right away? And by the way, there are a series of midrashim along these lines with different aspects. I just only highlighted this. What did Paro miss? Why did he regret right away? He missed our wealth, our civilization, our culture, our wisdom, our accomplishment, our professionalism. That's what he missed. It's a very interesting point that the Medrash is making, because it's historically it's true every country we've been in. They persecute the Jews, and then when the Jews leave, only then do they realize what they've lost. And I've mentioned a number of times here, maybe even this year, this article that's made the rounds on the internet now over almost a decade, from a Spanish journalist named Sebastian Rodriguez. Just Google the name, you'll find the article. I think it goes back to 2002 or 2005, entitled Europe Died in Auschwitz. And he writes very, I think it has to be anonymous because otherwise they would kill him. But he writes that literally Europe died in Auschwitz, and he says, not Jewish, and he said, just looking at the way European society has devolved in the last half century, that he says basically we exchanged our Jews for Muslims. We exchange the people of culture and refinement and intelligent people for Arabs. And he writes, barbarians, primitives, violent, brutes, uncivilized, and he said, we got what we deserved. And that's why all of Europe is changing. All of Europe is changing. And will it ever be the same again? Probably not. It's very hard to recover from that. Because they have a, most European countries have a negative birth rate. You know, below 2, it's 1.4, 1.6. The real birth is coming from the Muslim world, the immigrants, right? What's the most popular name in London now, year after year?
Mohammed.
Most popular boy's name, all right? You know the most popular boy's name in New York was last year? Jaden. I don't know why, but Jaden, yeah, J-A-Y-D-E-N. Okay, go figure. It's not Muhammad.
Right.
So Paro realized that the Jews were the key to Egyptian prosperity, and not just because he's losing slaves. That's part of it, but that's not it entirely. It's that what they brought to the nation, the Gedolei Malchus said to him, "No, these are sophisticated, talented people, Bali Umnius, the people who could do things. They're not just workers. They're not human animals. They're people much more than that." When that happened, so Paro realized that's that's what the Medrash says. And it's interesting that many times in history, after a nation has persecuted or evicted Jews, they have suffered substantial declines in prominence and in prosperity. I mean, the classic example is Spain. It's hard to imagine. Spain was a world power, the most powerful nation in the world in 1492. And they got rid of the Muslims. The Reconquista. They got rid of the Muslims, sent them all to North Africa. Most powerful empire in the world. Wealthy. With Ferdinand and Isabel represented two kingdoms. Aragon. There was a merger. Within 100 years, all right, it took 100 years, 1588, defeat of the Spanish Armada. But since then, you're talking now over four centuries. Spain is not a world power, nothing. Within a short time, they lost, their territories in America, and it's all gone. Gone? They have their own reasons why they think it's gone. Same thing happened in Poland, in Russia, in France.
Again in 1950.
Yeah, Egypt also, the Arab countries, that's correct. The Arab countries, absolutely true. It happened in France. It's interesting, when Jews were expelled from France, the king himself asked them to come back 20 years later. All right? It was a pattern. They'd be kicked out. Even in Germany, we lament, we mourn the Crusades, 1096, Speyer, Magenta, Vermeisa. Jews were back within a decade or two. Only to be persecuted, expelled again a few decades thence. But why? They really couldn't manage without it. That's what Paro saw right away. The Gedolei Malchus told him. And of course, the Medrash is telling us history. The Medrash is telling us a way to look at ourselves and to understand also how the world is going to look at us. And something else. Number two is actually a few Midrashim ahead, but I put it here because of its thematic linkage. Kol hayomim shehoyu habrios ro'em es Yisrael hoyu meshabchen osan. All the days when people look at the Jewish people, they praise us. And who praised us the most? Mi hoyu meshabchen, Bilam arasha. Bilam praised us. Because he saw shochem u'mishpechosav. Bilam saw the way our camp, the camp of Israel, was set up. And he said, Ma tovu olecha Yaakov. Mishkan Asecha Yisrael, Kinecholim Nito, you set up like streams, your paths, everything is very organized. I don't know what he was looking at, but nonetheless, that's what he saw. Bilam Ros on Vitama, Bilam saw this and he was astonished by it. Matova Ohalacha Yaakov, Paro Rosam, Shuro Shuros, Paro saw us as well, divide into rows, Kohanim, Levim, Yisraelim, Digalim, Digalim, under our banners. He began to scream and he said, Oy lo la oso ish, woe to that person, meaning himself, shekach hotzi mitachas yodo, that let such a people get out, lochei nemar, vahi b'shalach paro, vei vei. What do they see? they saw a society, this is what Bilam saw, and this is what, to a more limited extent, Paro saw. We'll see some sites in Avua here. They saw society arranged around a faith, around values, and that did not exist in the ancient world. To a great extent, it doesn't really exist today. Certainly the Western world doesn't exist. A society that's around, that's arranged around a faith. Paro realized that this was a people that was bound together, not just by an ethnic attachment, but by certain ideals. Actually, I said Bilam saw it first. Certain ideals that we received as the legacy of the Avos: goodness, chesed, kindness, just the orderliness of Jewish life. The way we're set up in roles: Kohanim, Levim, Yisraelim, each tribe its own degel, meaning each tribe able to express its own personality, make its own contribution, digolim, digolim. And he saw that his own society would suffer from the absence of this nucleus of a nation that knew how to govern itself. I had a power see that in Egypt. And of course, we didn't leave Egypt with digolim, the banners. That only came in the Midbar in the second year. So some of the Farshim say here that it's a nevuah, that Paro was able to foresee, maybe Bilam even told him, how the Jews would be in the wilderness, organized under our tribal banners. So what it is that he never thought that this nation of slaves could amount to anything. In fact, Paro, the Medrash is telling us, adopted the idea, not uncommon amongst tyrants, that these people can't live without me. All right, they'll be coming back very soon, because it's not possible for them to sustain themselves without the beneficence of the master. Let him try to manage in the Midbar without any food, without any water. Here he was saying, in effect, as a very compelling argument to them, serve me and you'll have everything. Or said a different way, you'll have everything. You have food, you have shelter, you have clothing, you have the necessities of life. Only one condition: you have to serve me. And he thought the offer was so appealing that they would have to accept it. But then he saw prophetically, wow, this is a nation. This is a nation that has much to contribute just in terms of governance. And so he said, let's bring them back. Yes?
But isn't that really the essence of the conflict? You say the Jews knew how to govern themselves, and that's always the greatest risk for a ruler.
Like, always. That's a very good point.
A community that comes to govern, then
yes,
they have to take it over.
That's great. That's why we're the bane of every dictator. See, dictators always try to homogenize the people, to make them all serve him. But every dictator knows that a Jew, by definition, has another master, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's why, even as other nations succumb, right, the Jews don't. Even the Soviet Union, all right, which after so many decades already, by no stretch of the imagination, were the Jews a pious people, right? And even though it was officially, the Soviets were officially an atheistic state, nonetheless they tolerated Russian Orthodoxy, because they knew that they could co-opt the religious structure into the communist infrastructure, and it did it successfully. For the Jews, somehow they always felt it was not possible. Not possible. And even though it was official synagogues also, they knew that if Jews were allowed to practice their religion, they could not. They would always be a fifth column within the empire, because Jews never have an allegiance just to the state. Our primary allegiance is always to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So we can be loyal citizens, there's no question about that. We are loyal citizens. Sometimes too loyal, right? That's the flip side of this. I don't think there was a case in history where the Jews were part of a revolt against the dictators that ruled them. Never. Until Jews joined in the revolution against the Tsar in the late 19th, early 20th century, the first time in history. But even that was not so much to have freedom for the Jews, but to try to install some type of a different political system, communism, that they thought would lead to equality, brotherhood, etc., and be better for them. So, but Jews are always very loyal citizens. In fact, to our detriment, we're loyal. But nonetheless, despite that obvious fact, that's why, for example, these countries that persecuted Jews, going back even to the early Middle Ages, the kings always had Jewish advisors. Why? They hated the Jews. They persecuted the Jews. Why? Because they knew they could trust the Jews. The advisor is always one of the things knows better than the king, right? So the advisor is usually the one who's fomenting the rebellion against the king. They knew the Jews would never do it. They knew the Jews could be trusted.
They're still doing the
same thing.
The
it's the exact same thing. That's correct. So therefore, Paro saw this, and then he regretted it, because he saw now there's a dimension of this nation that maybe I didn't really recognize that could benefit me even more than they were doing physically. There's something else to them than simply the raw labor that I had imposed upon them. And that was the regret of Paro. The Medrash has five or six different things that Paro regrets. I only highlight these two, because they stand out in the sense that they're recurrent phenomena in Jewish history. Again and again, nations see us this way. It all starts with Paro. But since then until today, nations see us this way. Okay. Number three. Davar Acher, Vahi B'Shalach Paro. Okay. You have to ask a basic question. It's really a machlokas, a fundamental machlokas amongst the Balei Midrash. Did Paro live or die? Did Paro survive Kriyas the Yamsuf? Or was he killed in Yamsuf? That's a machlokas in the Mechilta. Obviously, we can't resolve it. We know for sure that Paro is already dead by today, that we know. But whether he died in Yamsuf or not, that we don't know. And there are arguments on both sides, or even from the Psukim. What does the Pasuk say in the Shira? It's a Pasuk, Par v'chel hayom. V'chelo, Par v'chelo. We're in the Yom. Yodavayom, right. That's right. They're both in the sea, okay? And other Medrash says no, different Par survived. Let's look over here. So this Medrash was Paro died, but for this reason. Amar LaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ani Kasafti BaTorah, God says to Paro, I wrote in the Torah, Shalech T'Shalach Esoeim, Es Habonim Tikach Loch, the mitzvah Shalach Hakan. What's the mitzvah? That if you come across a mother bird sitting on its chicks, then you can't take the chicks unless you first send away the mother bird. It's cruel. But you Paro, Atosh Shalach T'Sa'avos, so now you think you're absolved from this because you sent out the fathers. Sent them out. What happened to the sons? You killed them. Alright? Exactly opposite of the mitzvah. So God says, I'm going to send you into the sea. I'm going to kill you. Shenemar v'ni'er paro v'chelo b'yam sofa. That's the Pasuk in Tehillim. That Paro was tossed about, and his chel, and his army in Yam Suf. V'ekach es bitcho v'orish lo gan Eden. But I'm going to take your daughter, Basyo, or Bisyo, the daughter of Paro, and I'm going to give her gan Eden. Okay. So what's the machlokas? How do we understand that can't the machlokas mitzvahs? How do we understand this machlokas whether Paro lived or died at Yam Suf? What's the pshat? So I think the question is, what would bring about the greater Kiddush Hashem, the greater sanctification of God's name? Or said a different way, what would spread God's ideas more? Would it be Paro's death or Paro's continued life? Meaning, if his nation realized that the God of all mankind was able to destroy the Egyptian army, and Paro himself was dead, humiliated, with his kingdom devastated, so there's a lesson in that for others as well, that everything's gone, everything is lost, and they have to rebuild their society from scratch. Or we say the opposite, the machlokas Mechilta. That no, the greater Kiddush Hashem, the greater way to propagate God's ideas is to have a living Paro, contrite and humble, bearing witness to what happened to him. There's another point. If we say Paro was killed in the water, that's Mida Keneged Mida. Because here he tried to kill Jews in the water, and now he was killed in the water. That would be the comeuppance that's appropriate. Like Hitler, the Mahshmo. How did he wind up? Burnt to death, like his victims in the crematoria. Burnt to death. Last spring I was in Berlin, so there's a place in Berlin. They don't really advertise it. There's just a sign and a marker that he's standing on Hitler's bunker. So the area was destroyed after the war. They destroyed it, so it shouldn't be a shrine. But there's a big sign with a map of where the buildings were, and around the spot you stand over him. I remember I spoke about it. I just stood there and spit, literally to spit on his grave. It was tremendous, I know. But nonetheless, he wound up dying in the same way that his victims did, being killed and then burnt, having his body burnt. That's Mida Keneged Mida. See, Paro was sent away. Shalech teshvach ha'saim, he's really sent into the water. That's habanim tikach loch. The children take for you. Who's the children? God takes his daughter. And his daughter has that for vengeance. His daughter accompanies her ward Moshe into the Midbar and into Gan Eden as well. Into Gan Eden as well. It's interesting that as I thought about the Medrash this morning, a little strange that here the mitzvah of Kansipor is Rachmanis, right? Not really. God's Rachmanis, and Gemara says you can't say in the davening, "Well, Kansipor Yirachamecha." It's a gzeir. It's not the God's rachamim, but there's no doubt it's our rachamim. We should internalize compassionate, merciful conduct towards other creatures. That's the mitzvah of Kansipor. But here, what's the compassion involved? The mitzvah of Kansipor is to send away the mother to teach us compassion. Where's the compassion towards Paro here? So I think there is Rachmanis also. What's the Rachmanis? The Rachmanis is that Paro is spared having to see his daughter join the Jewish people. All right, he's spared that because that's the ultimate renunciation of his life. Or said a different way, maybe that is the Rachmanis. That in fact, with all his evil, Paro at the end of the day was Shevet Evrasel. He was the rod of God's anger. It's a tool that God used. Leman Teda Kini Hashem Mekerav Aretz. You should know that I am God in the midst of the earth. That is Paro. So Paro was that tool. Therefore, it's Rachmanus on him, for him, that he should see that his posterity yet joins these people. You can look at it both ways, but I think that's the pshat. What's that?
I don't know. To me, it's a little too much Rachmanis.
A little too much Rachmanis, yeah.
No, meaning it's almost like a little exaggerated in terms of the situation as is.
Right.
Because that his daughter went with Moshe, so she was entitled to that. But I don't know if he was so focused on the daughter. He had a whole...
That's true. So take the first approach I said, that in fact it could have embittered him even more, knowing that not only is everything lost, his firstborn is gone, and now his daughter joins Moshe. What could be more painful than that?
We never hear any more about her after
Shemos. Right, well, the Midrashim speak about her. She died in the Midbar.
Right.
Right.
The fact
that some say she lived even to go into Eretz Yisrael. Okay. Why?
She saved
Moshe, but not only did she save Moshe, she really represented the ideal of the whole experience, that you could have an individual recognize God, act in a moral way. An individual was Egyptian, all right, and royalty. So she really had the most to lose. I mean, we should never minimize her courage. She had the most to lose. Here she defied her father by not killing this child, by letting the child live.
Yeah, there's a mentorship.
There always is, yeah.
That even when she lived in Paro's house, she was going to the Nile when she saw Moshe to convert. She had
something right. Meaning she was right. She was drawn to it. But clearly, even beyond the elaborations of the Medrash, the very fact that she could defy her father and commit what is essentially a decent act in a land of indecency. So that speaks very well of her. And that's something that the Torah wants to acknowledge. Okay, number four. So the pasuk continues. Vi b'shlach parasam v'lo nachon elokim derech eretz plishtim ki karofu. God did not lead the Jewish people through the land of the Plishtim, meaning up the Amaris along the Mediterranean coast, through Gaza, Ashkelon, into Israel, but we took the long route. Now the question is why. We'll look at a number of Midrashim. Why did God take the circuitous route through the Midbar as opposed to taking us the direct route into the land of Israel? Here the Midrash says as follows. Moshal lemelech shehoyah lo ben v'hoyah mevakesh liten lo yerusha. The Moshal, king, had a son. He wanted to give the son an inheritance. V'omer, he said to himself, im nosna lo ani achshav, if I give it to him now, here it means an inheritance as much as a gift. If I give it to him now, give all this land now to my son, adayin katan hu. The Eino Yedei L'Shomra, he's still very young. He won't know how to take care of it. Ela Ad Sheyilmad B'ni K'savim V'yamod Al Amkon. Let him at least learn the ropes. Let him learn how to take care of the land and understand it in depth. V'chakach Ani Nosna Lo. He's been trained a little, get a little older, a little more mature, and then he'll know how to develop the property. Kach Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu. This is what God said. Im ani machnis achshav Yisrael la'aretz, adayin lo nisasku b'mitzvos. If I just bring them right into the land immediately, forthwith, so they know nothing about mitzvos. Enam yodam iske trumos u'maisros. They know nothing about the mitzvos of the land. Mitzvos atluyos baretz. So they need some time to develop the knowledge to deal with the land properly, to observe the Torah. So first, let them. First, I'll give them the Torah, and then I'll take them into the land of Israel. Okay, what's the pshat? So we'll see a number of reasons along these lines, all of which point to our unreadiness for statehood. But the bottom line is, when we left Egypt, we were not ready to be a nation under the Torah. Too young, too immature. Too giddy, we would have to earn it. We'd have to really slowly prepare ourselves for it. We needed the Torah first. And here you have the Medrash, one of the great messages of Jewish life that permeates us until today. Not all of us, but it's one of the major sticking points today, but historically as well. And that is that the essence of the Jewish people is the Torah and not the land. The land is part of the world of Torah. But the Torah is not part of the world of the land. The essence is the Torah.
The mitzvos. We have the mitzvos of the land.
Some of the mitzvos. Some of the mitzvos. And the land, of course, is the ideal tableau in which the mitzvos are performed. But without the land, there's still a Torah. And there's still a Jewish people. The land itself is secondary to the Torah. The essence of Jewish identity, like Reb Sadia said, "Einu Masena Uma Ela B'Torah." Our nation is a nation because of the Torah, and not because of anything else. What happens when we become a state and we're not yet ready to implement the Torah in that state? We're living through that now. That's exactly the era in which we're living. We have a state, but not yet ready to implement the Torah in the framework of a state. That's the first point the Medrash is telling us, that the readiness of the Jewish people is a readiness that comes to us only through acceptance of the Torah. Next, number five, next page. Dover Acher, Lo Nacham Elokim, Derech Eretz Plishtim. What does it mean, Derech Eretz Plishtim? Amr Shimon Bar Abba Amr B'Yochanan, Kevan Sheshamu HaKananim Sheyisrael Nechnasim La'aretz, Omdu V'Katetzu HaNatiyos. As soon as the Canaanim heard that the Jewish people had left Egypt and were coming to Israel, that was the plan, they right away chopped down everything. They chopped down the trees, they uprooted all the plants, they would leave the land desolate, right? Remember, they knew that the Bnei Yaakov had left, and I guess on some level they assumed they'd eventually come back and reclaim their homes, but nonetheless, that is what happened. As soon as they heard that is happening, they said, okay, let's not make it easy for them. scorched earth policy. That's what they adopted. Kevin Shashamu Shinisakvu by Midbar Arba Shana, once they heard that they took a different route, they're not coming right away. Surum Shabim Midbar Te Dirasam. They assumed, maybe they're not coming back. Maybe they'll live a more nomadic existence in the wilderness. Amdu Venatunatias Vigiduasan. So once again, they planted, they grew things, the land sprouted, and that's when God took us into the land of Israel. The Rabbeinu Hagadol Omer, so Rebbe said, Lefisha Bikesh HaKadosh Baruch Hu Liten Eima Son Shal Yisrael Ovde Kochavim, Ikvan Arbim Shana Bamidbar, Umeir Lehem Bamud Anan Beyom, Uvamud Eish Laila. So God wanted to intimidate the nations in the land, kept us in the Midbar 40 years, built up the pressure, guided us by day with a pillar of cloud, by night, pillar of fire. V'shamu kol de kochavim, all the idolaters heard, naflu aleim re'adah, they were terrified, the pasuk says in the Shira, tipol aleim emasov afachad, v'achar av maksiv, to the aim of the sita aimo. So these are actually two different reasons. Let's go to the first verse. When they heard the Jewish people coming, they decided to devastate their land. What's the pshat? Now, the reason why then it had to take 40 years was to allow the land to develop again. That's in fulfillment of the pasuk in the Torah that Moshe said to the people, you shouldn't worry about coming to the land of Israel. You'll enter large, good cities that you didn't even build. Houses filled with all types of good things that you didn't fill. You have an entire land waiting for you. Buildings, houses, orchards, crops, resources. It'll all be there. Do not worry. Why did it take time? So here's the second point. The people were not ready to physically develop or to govern the land. They were not ready for that. They were slaves, slave mentality. Everything had to be provided for them. And so they had to come into a land where right away they'd be able to eat and to utilize the infrastructure that's there without having to come to virgin soil and creating everything from scratch. That they could not do. What's the moral? One moral at least. The Hashgacha knows best. Many times we think something is an onesh, like 40 years in the wilderness, and it comes out it's actually necessary, and it's a bracha too, because they could not have done it otherwise. They were physically not ready for statehood. The first point was they weren't spiritually ready for statehood. The second point was that they were not physically ready for statehood. What's the third point here in the Medrash? Ema? They weren't ready to conquer the land. They weren't militarily ready to conquer the land. But for the Ra'ada, Tipol Aleim Masav Afachad, but for the fact that they were terrified, petrified of the Jews, they would not have been able to conquer the land. Lamaisa, they didn't conquer the land because God did it for us. But nonetheless, they weren't militarily ready to do it either. And six is the next one. Vayasev Elokim Esom, could go another mashal. Socher Echad Shekana Par Lekinyon. Guy buys a cow. We don't really do that anymore today, except if it's wrapped up in the plastic, but fellow buys a cow. And unfortunately, he lived right near the slaughterhouse. Okay? Bad karma for the cow. Omar, imani molech osal derech beisi, if I take him, you know, past the slaughterhouse on the way to my home, hiro oz beis hashchita, vesadamim vibarachas. It'll see, you know, for whom the bell tells eventually. And it'll flee. I'll take them a different way. All right, so that's what the guy said about his cow. Take them the longer route, not past the base of Shita. So too the people of Gaza. Gaza's been a trouble spot for Jews since antiquity. The people of Gaza and Ashkelon and the rest of the land of the Philistines, they're eventually going to attack us. If we went that route, a war would ensue immediately. Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu, Shelo Yiru Yisrael HaMilchama V'yachzru Lahem L'Mitzrayim. If we went that route, the people would then just, they'll see war coming, they would flee back to Egypt. Shenemar, Pen Yinachema Om B'Rasa Milchama V'Shav Mitzrayim. They'll go right back. Me'asa Kadosh Baruch Hu Holichon Derech Acheretz. Derech Acheres, Shenemar Ve'Yasev Elokim Ezom. What did God do? It took us a different route. So we saw already the Jews were spiritually not ready, physically not ready, militarily not ready. What is this? Psychologically not ready. Not psychologically ready for the rigors of battle to fight for their homeland. They were fearful. So fearful that what the Pasuk says is the reality of Jewish life in the Midbar. At the first drop of a hat, too many ready to go back to Egypt. Egypt, for all its problems, for all its persecution, for all the difficulties of living in the Kor Barzel, Egypt represents to them a sort of security. You know, it's the devil that we knew, not the devil that we don't know. And that's what, it's always attractive to the psyche. People get accustomed to difficult things very quickly, as long as it doesn't get worse. And then even that, say you're able to adjust. Certainly it's like that historically as well. You know, I always reference what Begin wrote in White Nights, that when he was in prison in Siberia, to get used to Yisrael, and Yisrael, he always dreamed about going to Israel. That's what kept him going. And then he got into argument with some of the interrogators and put him in solitary. And he said, in solitary, you just dream about yourself. God, not Israel. You dream about going back to your cell, okay? But you adjust. Even your cell, you adjust the cell. In solitary, you adjust to that. You just keep adjusting. It's the nature of the healthy psyche that adjusts to too much. Hey, we see, and even in Israel, I mean, the way they adapted to terror, it's frightening. Because it becomes the way of the world. Yeah, you know, every now and then it'll be a bomb and a rocket and, you know, just it's part of life. It should be part of life. It's a healthy part of the psyche until it destroys you. But here they weren't ready for that. They weren't ready for war. They were too ready to go back to Egypt. And therefore God said, no, until they're psychologically ready, until they have the psyche of a free people, willing to fight, willing to govern themselves, willing to employ everything necessary in order to survive and to prosper, they're not ready for statehood. It'll be a failed experiment. So therefore you need the pedagogical experience of the Midbar in order to prepare them. And of course, as we saw, they in fact never became prepared, and it had to be another generation to do it. They themselves were not prepared for it. Okay, finally, it's the Gemara Sanhedrin. Rashi quotes in the Sanhedrin in a slightly different form, but it's very very interesting medrash. It's the Gemara Sanhedrin daf nun vav amud beis. Esther mitzvah, say after Yom Suf, what happened went to Mara, and there was bitter water, right, in Mara. And the Torah says, Shom sam lo chokum ishpat v'shom niso. There God gave us a statute and a law. There he tested us with the waters of Mara. At Mara, Eser mitzos nitzavu Yisrael b'Mara. We were commanded 10 mitzos in Mara. Sheva shekiblo aleim b'nei Noach, the 7 Noachide laws. Vosifu aleim, added to that, the Gemara says, with 3 sets of laws, 3 institutions. Dinim, civil law. Shabbos, kibud av v'em. Alright? Dinim d'chsiv sham sam l'chokum mishpat. Shabbos v'kibud av v'em d'chsiv kasher tzivcha shem l'kecho. We were already commanded kasher tzivcha b'mara, Rabbi Yehuda said. The Medrash, the Mechilta here, adds a fourth. In fact, the Mechilta has 3. Shabbos, kibud av v'em, I'm sorry, Shabbos, dinim, and parah aduma. All right, and that's what Rashi quotes, if I remember correctly. And the Gemara adds kibud av v'em. What does that do with anything? Where does this come from? You see, it comes out that some mitzvahs, like Shabbos, like kibud av v'em, we were not commanded at Sinai, at Horeb. They came before, at Mara, a few weeks earlier. Why? What's the importance of these? What do they have in common, really? And that's the question. What do they have in common? Shabbos, Kibraveim, Paraduma, and Dinim. Okay? Four really disparate mitzvos. Really disparate mitzvos. And yet there's a common denominator. I always recall, you know, one of the most painful and disheartening incidents in my life when you come across such a medrash. I was, I think, 5 or 6. I was 5 years old. And there's a show on television where a kid show, and they had a contest that they ran, and they said you could draw like 5 lines, and there was an artist who will make anything you want out of those lines. And if you can't do it, they give you a prize. If you lose, you get a consolation prize. I sent it in. I was a child of 5, and what did you know? I was selected. Okay? And it's all taped in advance, so they sent us a letter back in those days, you remember them, that my show would be, my letter would be on this date. My mother took me out from school early, came on, I think, I don't know, 3:30 or so, and I sent in 5 completely wild lines, all right, and asked the guy to draw a hippopotamus. Okay? What did he do? He drew a hippopotamus around those lines and then filled the lines in. It soured me on mankind until today.
He cheated.
So by the semi-consolation prize. But nonetheless, here you have 4 completely disparate lines, all right? Shabbos, Paraduma, Kibbut Avim, Dinim, what do they have in common? Okay. Mrs. Shore is not here this morning. Her son gave me a sefer written by his grandfather, her father-in-law, Rav Avram Leib Shore, Raman Slobodka. It's a very interesting pshat that really ties a lot of things together. What are all these mitzvahs? What do they have in common? What was the point of giving mitzvahs at Marah? So he writes as follows, that after Yom Suf, the Jews had to be purged of the impurity of Egypt in order to be ready even to receive the Torah and to move on in the Midbar. And Egyptian society was rooted in one basic error. One fundamental error they made that completely dominated their thinking. Egypt was a cruel, inhuman, brutal dictatorship. How did it come about? It's because they did not see man as anything special. Man was just another animal, a brute. There was no soul, not the Tzirkap of Shakarish Baruch Hu, not the creation of God. Rather, man is a small, insignificant creature, like an animal, more sophisticated animal. Who rules? The strong dominate the weak. Really no difference between Paro and his serf. What? Exactly. Paro is really no different than the serf, except that Paro is more powerful. So therefore he's able to rule over the others. They saw man basically as an animal, no past, no present, no future, work. That's it. You work and that's all you're good for. Now there was a danger when the Jewish people came out of Yam Suf. Vayar Yisrael Mitzrayim, Meis Al Svasayom. What did they see? They saw thousands of corpses. They saw basically man, Susa Rochvo Ram Hayom. It's a comparison, it's an analogy. Not only the horse, but the rider. They're both tossed into the sea. What's the difference between the horse and the rider? Nothing. They're both dead. It's the same. We could have been afflicted with the very same mentality with which we were raised in Egypt, and that would color the way we approached our lives, each other, and the way forward. So therefore we give the mitzvahs. And we give the mitzvahs, in fact, that highlight the uniqueness, the special character of the human being. First is Shabbos. What Shabbos? Shabbos is Ikar L'Masabreshus. Shabbos is a reminder that God created the world. God created not only the world, but created man and endowed man with a soul. Man was the apex of creation. So man now has a past. Because man's past is rooted in the fact that God created him. And Kibbut Avim. Man is the product of two thinking beings. Not like animals. Purely instinctual, but two thinking beings, mother and father, who raise him, who guide him, who impart to him values. Parents give children a present. Hoveh, present. Not only that, but dinim serve the same purpose. What are dinim? Dinim ominous. At civilization. It enables us to live together. It enables us to make sure that we don't encroach on each other's rights, that we respect others, their property, their persons. We respect others. Dinim are rooted in the honor that we have to show ben adam chavero, between man and fellow man. Without that, then ish esrei chaim blah. Without that, we'll just swallow each other alive, which in fact is what happens in primitive societies. So kibra va'em, in the sense dinim as well. And notice Medrash Mechilta, they have one or the other, not both. The Gemara has Kibra Ve'em, Mechilta has, Paraduma. So what's Paraduma? So the Kibra Ve'em, Dinim, really the same in that sense. They both give man the present, but one is in the family unit, one is within society. What's Paraduma? Man has a soul. All right. Man has a soul, which we acknowledge in death. Death is the separation of the soul from the body. When the soul leaves the body becomes tame. Man is purified from the tumah sames, through the paraduma. Man, but because man has a soul, it means that man has a future too. That this world is not the only world. That man has a future. The soul is eternal. The soul lives on. So at Mara, you see, Rav Shur said, the mitzvos that we were given were given specifically to teach us the value and the worth and the potential of the human being. Once we were able to assimilate those, then we're ready for Matan Torah, we're ready for Kabbalah Satorah, we're ready for Avodas Hashem, ready to receive the Torah, ready to serve God. We had to have our perception of the role of man in the world not tinkered as with as much as transformed, revolutionized, that completely eradicate the Egyptian notion of man and embrace the Torah's definition of man as a past, a present, and a future, as obligations towards God, obligations towards each other, but a soul that's eternal that connects us to eternity. Once we have that, we're ready to move on, and that's why we have these mitzvahs given to us at Mara. Okay, I thank you all very much.
Is this the only place before Matan Torah that mitzvahs were given?
Only place at Mara.
At Mara.
It's just a few weeks.
Yeah.
Well, no, because you have also, part of Shabbos is the month. You know, so you had the mitzvahs of the month to take it every day, not to leave it over. But that's related to Shabbos as well. It's also, it's similar, but not, but in any event, the month is not part of, not right away, but right after Yom Tov. But it's not part of Taryag, but it's just they had to know how to interact with God in a respectful way. That's correct. Okay, tonight we discuss Great Decisions 19, the settlements. I can't start without you, so please start.
Okay.